If you are a Christian coach, speaker, or influencer, this is the right place. You're listening to the Keep Writing Podcast, a resource for biblical encouragement, spirit-led wisdom, and practical ideas as you answer God's calling to increase your authority by becoming an author. I'm Nika Maples, and I can help you write your next book so that you can take your business to the next level while advancing the kingdom and transforming people in Jesus' name. Before we get started today, I want to draw your attention to a wonderful resource that I have for you. If you have been desiring to write a book, but you feel kind of hung up because you don't know anything about the publishing process, I got you covered. You may be considering traditional publishing. You may be considering self-publishing, also known as independent publishing. So I, having experienced both, have put together a guide that is just what you've been looking for. I put a scorecard and checklists for traditional publishing and independent publishing, as well as explain the cost and the timeline for both. I want you to be able to be educated and informed so that you can relax and continue with the process of writing your book. Where do you get my publishing guide? Well, you can get your very own copy at nikamaples.com/publishing guide. It's called Pray and Print, Your Guide to Navigating the Christian Publishing Process. And you can download yours today at nikamaples.com/publishing guide. Right now, I'm in a quick mini series of unpopular opinions. These are my opinions, things that I think about all the time that maybe I don't give air to, maybe I don't share it that often, or maybe I don't share it ever. But I felt an urge to let you know me a little more, just to know the rumblings inside my brain that are not published, polished teachings, but just something that I'm kind of always thinking about. Know that I'm not coming from a place of judgment. And if any of this applies to you, I don't want you to think, oh my goodness, now I know that Nika's thinking about this all the time and she's criticizing me. No, I'm not. But I just have an awareness of this and I wanted to just put it out there. And today, my unpopular opinion is about using the word Bible character. Just about everyone I know, every pastor, every speaker, every writer uses the term character when referring to the people in the Bible. This crawls under my skin. It just irks me to no end. It's one of those pet peeves that I have. And with most pet peeves, you can find somebody, you're like, is that a pet peeve for you too? Yeah, me too. On this one, I'm kind of alone, but hopefully I can maybe turn the ship a little bit. And when you hear what I have to say, you may catch yourself in the future. I'm not trying to be legalistic. I know ultimately it's just a matter of semantics, but I think I'm kind of onto something here when I say the word character is not the right term to use for the record of human people in the Bible. As an English teacher, I'm aware of the literary elements, the terms, the vocabulary that's used for fiction writing. And one of the terms is character. It means a person who is a figment of the author's imagination. A character is someone who never existed, that the author is forming as they write, creating circumstances and experiences that are not real. The word character brings up connotations of cartoons, that Superman is a character, Mighty Mouse is a character, Spider-Man is a character, Harry Potter is a character. All of these different people recorded in fiction stories from Charles Dickens and Ebenezer Scrooge, or to more current works of fiction like Ove and A Man Called Ove by Frederick Bachman. These different people are not real people. Now, why are we using the term character to describe anyone whose story is recorded in the Bible. You may say, what's wrong with it? I know that these people were real, but I'm just using the term character. I would assert that you do not use the term character in any other place or in any other way. For instance, when you read a history textbook, you don't look at Abraham Lincoln and call him a character. You say he was a man, a person, a historical figure. You would never call Martin Luther King a character. And even villains like Adolf Hitler, you would not refer to as a character. You talk about them as if they existed. You call them, again, men and women of the past, historical figures, people, a person. So why do we refer to the historical textbook that is the Bible in a different way? Well, I think part of it started just because we have made some stories juvenile, like the story of Noah, focusing more on the animals coming in two by two and the oversized boat and the rainbow and de-emphasizing the human slaughter that took place when everyone else on the earth died a screaming, traumatic death, and completely leaving out the part of the story where Noah took a path of drunkenness and misused his opportunity to repopulate the earth right away and walk in God's refreshed covenant. We instead make it palatable for children, and we call these people, these men and women of God, characters. We make Moses a character to children, that he stretches out his hand and the sea magically opens. No, it supernaturally opened before him, and he was just a person who was as surprised as you and I would be. We make Abraham a character. We make David and Goliath a character. They're depicted in cartoon ways for children. And somehow we let this understanding of the word continue into our adulthood. And then we end up having preachers who will stand behind a pulpit, open the word of God, and use the term character. Just this last weekend, I heard a pastor go on and on about the characters in the Bible. And this character did this, and that character did that. And you got to remember, these characters were interacting with God. And I said, listen, they're not characters. I wanted to stand up in the middle of the service, but I recognize how disrespectful that would be. And so I didn't even go up to the pastor after the service and say my unpopular opinion that the word character isn't appropriate when talking about something historical. I have disciplined my speech to only use words like historical figures, men, women, person, and people when talking about the Bible. At times, it has been difficult because we're so conditioned to using the word character that at first it was really hard to get out of the habit. But now I am out of the habit, and I only use those terms that remind me that the people in the Bible were human beings. They weren't different, that they weren't working with fantastical opportunities like Marvel characters would. These are real women and men who are just as surprised, just as confused, just as in pain, just as desperate as I am on any given day. And I would think that somehow the origin of the word character has a bit of a sinister bent behind it because it's so pervasive. Anything that we see that is absolutely pervasive, that 99.99% of people do this without thinking, I always get a little suspect and say, what is the enemy up to? I think the enemy wants us to devalue these people and make them into truly fictitious figments of our imagination, separating us a little more from them every day, even though we will logically say, yes, 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 I know they were real. There is a distance between us and anyone that we are calling a character. So I urge you today, kind of revamp your language. Give yourself permission to explore eliminating the word character when referencing the Bible. It will be difficult at first, but you'll get used to it. And now I'm going to read Hebrews 11, and I want you to realize these are not characters. These are real people who bled and breathed and wondered and prayed and struggled and walked and wrestled and fell on their knees with questions unanswered. And God was faithful. He's faithful to you, a person living today as one who believes. Now, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we don't see. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. By faith, Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as righteous when God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith, Abel still speaks, even though he is dead. By faith, Enoch was taken from this life so that he didn't experience death. He couldn't be found because God had taken him away. Before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it's impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear built an ark to save his family. By his faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that is in keeping with faith. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he didn't know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to a city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. And by faith, even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They didn't receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. People who say such things know they're looking for a country of their own. If they'd been thinking of the country they'd left, they would have had the opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned." Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead, and so in a manner of speaking, he did receive Isaac back from death. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau in regard to their future. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff. By faith, Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt and gave instructions concerning the burial of his bones. By faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw he was no ordinary child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to be mistreated along with the people of God, rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt,
because he was looking ahead to his reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. By faith, he kept the Passover and the application of blood so that the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land. But when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after the army had marched around them for 7 days. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. And what more shall I say? I don't have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. There were others who were tortured, refusing to be released so that they may gain an even better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and in holes in the ground. These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. My friend, the Bible is a record of the people of God, and they are not characters. They are the church.
Are you subscribed to my YouTube channel yet? I love creating weekly lessons that will bring value and insight to you on your writing, publishing, and book marketing journey. When you listen to my podcast, you learn through your ears. But when you watch my YouTube channel, you learn through your eyes and your ears, making double the impact in half the time. See you over on YouTube.